Hello, this is Paul Hood. The purpose of this podcast series is to highlight several demonstrated areas of significant disagreement among business appraisers that affect tax valuations as well as the general disciplines of business valuation as a whole. Most estate planners blithely believe that there exists a set of generally accepted appraisal principles that all business appraisers must follow. Unfortunately, the literature and purported body of knowledge within the business appraisal profession are replete with disagreements, some bordering on vehement, on how to treat certain business valuation issues. Where a business appraiser stands on a particular issue will affect that client's business appraisal report. A little Southern wisdom for you. Where you stand depends a lot upon where you sit. Where there exists a professional dispute on a particular business valuation issue, you can bet your bottom dollar that the IRS or the opposing appraiser will be on the other side of that issue. Therefore, given the amount of valuation litigation, it is imperative that estate planners know where business appraisers stand on an issue before that issue is joined. This podcast discusses the following burning issue: whether or not to apply a discount for the tax on embedded capital gains on assets held inside of an entity. At one time, the issue of whether an embedded capital gains discount was even applicable to stock in a closely held C corporation was at issue. At first, the tax court rejected the discount. However, since the Second Circuit's acknowledgement of the validity of the discount for embedded capital gains by overturning the tax court in Eisenberg versus Commissioner, and the service's acquiescence in that decision, the issue has shifted as to this matter and is now how the built-in capital gains discount is estimated. For example, in Davis versus Commissioner, the taxpayers' appraiser experts even disagreed amongst themselves how the effects of built-in taxes should be recognized. One of the taxpayers' experts in Davis made a separate adjustment for the tax on embedded capital gains, while the other expert, as well as the services expert, included the effects of embedded capital gains as an increment of the discount for lack of marketability. In Davis, Judge Kiecki granted a discount for embedded capital gains, but that discount was not equal to the total estimated tax. Unfortunately, she did not explain much of her rationale, which is usually judge speak for splitting the baby. In Borgatello Estate versus Commissioner, the next estimation issue was identified: the assumed holding period of the appreciated assets, which in that case were shopping centers. This issue can have a dramatic impact on the present value of the discount because the longer the assumed holding period, the lower the discount. The IRS expert argued for a 10-year holding period, while the taxpayer's expert argued for a 7-year holding period. The tax court sided with the IRS based upon the IRS expert's testimony that he had derived the 10-year holding period from local market data analysis. One of the key unresolved issues seems to be how to estimate the holding period in a manner that would be consistent with the hypothetical aspect of the willing buyer, willing seller test. Current thinking on that test indicates that one should assume that the entity assets are marketed beginning on the valuation date or even sold on that date. However, this assumption might be inconsistent with the assumption that the entity is a going concern. Selling all assets may be tantamount to a liquidation or at the very least, a cessation of operations, which could make a net asset value liquidation method the most appropriate valuation method. Can any such inconsistency be tolerated? It is unclear. In Simplot Estate versus Commissioner, appraisal experts for the estate and for the IRS deducted 100% of the built-in capital gains tax, and neither the tax court nor the Ninth Circuit even questioned that position. In a state of Dunn, the Fifth Circuit held as a matter of law that deduction of 100% of the built-in capital gains tax was proper. In Jelke The tax court determined that a 16-year liquidation period was a reasonable period for the corporation to conduct an orderly liquidation of a securities portfolio that had a whopping $51.6 million capital gain embedded tax liability inside of it. However, on appeal, the 11th Circuit reversed, following the 5th Circuit's decision in a state of Dunn. The 11th Circuit's rationale was that its rule provided a bright-line test for both courts and taxpayers, and the United States Supreme Court denied the IRS's request for a writ of certiorari. In Jensen Estate v. Commissioner, the most recent case, the tax court allowed 100% of the discount for embedded gains that the taxpayer claimed, but the court did not simply take off 100% of the inherent tax using the bright-line test. Indeed, the court determined that a 17-year holding period was appropriate. It is not known at this time whether the IRS will appeal that decision, but any such appeal would lie to the U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals. I personally believe that considering some sort of holding period analysis will win out over the bright line all of it rule, because one simply cannot ignore the time value of money. It's just as simple as that. That concludes this podcast. The next podcast in this series of burning business valuation issues deals with whether or not to tax affect S corporations, and this is a whopper. Thank you.